This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. This week, we're going into the politics of politics with our brand is Crisis and Truth, but we're also going to be going into some horror movie stuff because it's Halloween weekend. We've got Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, and of course, it wouldn't be a Fat Guy show without a little bit of food-related information, so let's talk about Burnt a little bit, which is Bradley Cooper taking on French cuisine. Plus some Halloween horror movies and a Fat Guy 5 later in the show. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, box office predictions, and of course the world-famous DVD roundup. But first, this is how you can get in touch with me. You can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. Also Instagram at fatguysatthemovies. And finally, Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. Let's jump right into the news. First, a sad piece of news. We have to say rest in peace to Maureen O'Hara. She was 95 years old when she passed away, which is kind of, that's amazing. I mean, I know a lot of people will remember her from movies she did with like John Ford and John Wayne, but I will always remember her for her role in Miracle on 34th Street, one of my favorite Christmas movies of all time. And the fact that she was so outspoken to how terrible the other versions of that movie were. She loved the original that she was in and she adored it. And she always spoke so highly of the movie, but then she was really dismissive of all the, with good reason, dismissive of all the other versions of the film. Every year I would watch Miracle on 34th Street and you check out the who's alive from it. And I always was like stunned. I'm like, wow, she's still around. She died of natural causes, but she was 95. And wow, that's a run. I'll tell you, that is one heck of a run. So it's sad to see her go, but she left a great imprint on American cinema. Rest in peace, Maureen O'Hara. Next piece of news is, of course, I got to talk about the DC Cinematic Universe that's coming up. The Joker from the Suicide Squad, he actually got a cover for Empire Magazine. And I have to say, I am not digging the way the Joker looks. I already had a problem with all the tattoos and have it says damaged on the front of his head. That's just a little heavy-handed for me. And now he's got like this sort of this slick purple snakeskin jacket. And I mean, he looks, honestly, he has a better costume than the girls did in Gem and the Holograms. He looks more like he belongs in the Gem and the Holograms cartoon than the characters from the movie that they made and bombed last week. So I'm still not sold on it. I think Harley Quinn looks great, but you know, then again, Margot Robbie could, you can wear a burlap sack and I think she's going to look fantastic. Joker, we'll wait to see what the movie does. The next piece of news, a little tidbit on Indiana Jones. Frank Marshall, the producer who produced all the other Indiana Jones movies, came out and he was quoted as saying they're, quote, not doing the Bond thing where we're going to call someone else Indiana Jones. We have to figure this out. And this is important because Indiana Jones 5 has been in development since Indiana Jones 4, which was 7 years ago, was released 7.5 years ago. Which meant it went into production at least 8.5, 9 years ago. Harrison Ford was almost 10 years younger. Now, he is 73 years old. He's getting up to where Maureen O'Hara was when she passed. I mean, and he's still talking about doing an action movie. He's 15 years older now. Harrison Ford, right at this moment, is 15 years older than Sean Connery was when he played his dad in Indiana Jones 3. So he's way too old to be doing this leaping from train to train type stunt. And, you know, the clock's ticking. Does this mean Indiana Jones 5 is dead? I mean, they tried this whole pass the torch onto a younger star, and that didn't work. That went over like a lead balloon with Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull. And how is Lucas going to be involved? That's another thing I find interesting, because Lucas always had a certain amount of involvement, not just through the studio, but he felt ownership of that. Maybe he's just washed his hands of that as he has washed his hands of the Star Wars franchise. And then how is Spielberg involved? I mean, Spielberg's got so many other things he's doing. Is he really going to do another Indiana Jones movie? I mean, I love Spielberg's stuff, but this may be just past his involvement. The final thing I want to talk about is just a real quick note. I don't really cover TV, and I'll drop in a TV discussion now and then, but there was a big thing with TV recently with The Walking Dead. Apparently, somebody died on The Walking Dead, or maybe died on The Walking Dead, and people started tweeting about it and hashtagging it and making memes, and then you had people losing their minds saying, don't set out spoilers on Twitter, don't send out spoilers on Facebook. And here's the thing. The reality is, when there's a live show that's broadcast to essentially the entire country at the same time, or at least a giant portion of the country because the people on the West Coast got it 3 hours later, you're going to get spoilers. And that doesn't mean that the people dropping the spoilers are good or bad. It's just everybody's watching it together, which is very different than going to see a movie where people shouldn't be even tweeting in the theaters and they can come out and say, oh, this happened, but you don't get that pervasiveness of the tweets. I learned a long time ago to just avoid social media. If there's a show that's going on live that you eventually want to watch, that's just the way it is. That's like saying, oh, you know, I wish people wouldn't be robbed. I'm not equating robbery with dropping spoilers on social media, but the bottom line is people are going to do it. And the best thing you can do is protect yourself. You can lock your doors, you know, so people don't rob your house. You can just stay off social media while they broadcast The Walking Dead, or watch it live, or just stay off and then make a point to watch it in that first day. But don't get mad if you're on social media and you get it spoiled. By now, you should know Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, these big series, and anybody you follow, you may have a huge fan of The Middle, that TV show on ABC, and yeah, I probably get spoiled every week as well. But what always irritates me are when people will say, well, I don't mind spoilers. I don't see what the big deal is. Look, I got a friend who has no sense of smell. I know that's an odd thing. He's sort of scent deaf. He just doesn't have his sense of smell for whatever reason isn't there. So if he's in an elevator and somebody farts in an elevator, he's not going to care. But that doesn't mean that he can go around farting in elevators and then saying to people, what's the big deal? If it doesn't bother you, you don't get to dictate that it doesn't bother somebody else. So saying, oh, I don't mind spoilers, that's not an excuse for them. That's like saying, oh, I don't mind a-holes. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is Joy. I've been delaying covering this trailer for so long for a couple reasons. One of them is because I'm not a huge fan of David O. Russell, and also because it's really hard to get the sense of story from these trailers. But this is the latest David O. Russell movie with the same cast, Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, Robert De Niro, that he's had for his last couple movies, and it's going to be dropping on Christmas Day, December 25th.
I was valedictorian in high school. I got into a fancy college. I stayed here because my parents are getting divorced.
No! You know what you are, Terry? You're like a gas leak. We don't see you, we don't smell you, but you're silently killing us all.
Maybe your dreams are on hold for now.
That's a nice way of putting it. I have real ambitions and real ideas.
We're making an invention, and it's very serious.
Joy's never run a business in her entire life.
It's my fault. I gave her the confidence to think she was more than just an unemployed housewife.
I mean, I like Jennifer Lawrence. I like Bradley Cooper. I like Robert De Niro. I don't particularly love David O. Russell. I did not like Silver Linings Playbook at all. And I don't know. It's always tough when you come to the end of the year and you've got these award films. I don't know if they're going to be any good. The next trailer I want to talk about is Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Opens not on Halloween, but on February 6th.
I've been training for this my whole life.
The fairest wifely choices be right here in this room.
My daughters are trained for battle, sir. Not the kitchen.
A woman must have a thorough knowledge of singing, dancing, and the art of war.
I shall never relinquish my sword for a ring.
The right man, you would.
The right man wouldn't ask me to.
I know zombies are a big deal, and this is a fun little take on Pride and Prejudice. It looks a little bit like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which may not be a good thing. So I like the idea, and the production value looks really good, but it looks like it gets almost a little bit too cheeky for its own good. We'll see what happens in about 3 months. And that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Truth and burnt. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr, rolling into the movie reviews. Let's hit the first one, which was in limited release for a couple weeks. It's finally kind of gotten that nationwide expansion, so I figured it's time to talk about it. And that is Truth. Kate Blanchett plays Mary Mapes, producer of 60 Minutes 2, whose investigation into President Bush's military record comes under fire.
Hey, Mary, these blogs are saying that the memos can be recreated in Microsoft Word.
Several experts have raised serious questions.
They're going to start an investigation.
This is bad.
Somebody has got to confirm those memos.
This isn't a trial. This is a hunt.
Our story was about whether the president fulfilled his service. Nobody wants to talk about that. They want to talk about fonts and forgeries. And they hope to God the truth gets lost in the scrum.
I remember covering this about a month ago on the Trailer Park. And my thoughts from the trailer, which is the same trailer I played. I got a little bit different version of the trailer, but it's essentially the same trailer. And my response to this was, why are we covering President Bush's military record? It's such an irrelevant topic now. I mean, Bush has been out of office since 2009, you know, January of 2009. That's 6 years ago. He's never going to run for office again. The time to be outraged over this is long past. I thought it was dredging up some old news story and covering that like it was a big gotcha. To me, it would be like in about 10 years, if somebody did a movie and called it The Certificate and made it about Obama's birth certificate, which in 10 years from now, it's an irrelevant point. Now it's an irrelevant point. He's got a year and a half left in office. Regardless of who's president next, it's not going to be Obama. So he's not going to be in there. And so the time to be outraged for any of that would have been the first and second terms, which people were. And you can have arguments over this. So I thought it was about the politics. It's really not about the politics of politics. It's the politics of the news business. And I've not done much time in television news, but I've worked in radio. I've worked in newspapers. And this takes place at a very critical time. It's when the national news, like the CBS, NBC, and ABC News, they were still powerhouses. The 24-hour news networks, they'd come around, but they hadn't really gotten their claws deep into news hounds the way they do now. I mean, now, if you want conservative, you can watch Fox. If you want liberal, you can watch MSNBC. You have choices, and those choices of news can be easily coinciding. You can insulate yourself from certain political viewpoints. You can insulate yourself from mainstream news, and you can just go to one side or the other. Now, the movie Truth takes place at the time when 60 Minutes 2 was still a big deal. I don't think anybody cares about news magazine shows, and now it's all on their stations, because there's only about a half hour of real news that people want to listen to over the course of the day. And the other 23 and a half hours is spent on specialty programming that just overanalyze everything. This was before that all kind of became regular and became normal. It reminds me of the movies they made 5-6 years ago about the disintegration of print press. I mean, nowadays, you know, movies like All the President's Men way, way, way back in the 70s, that are almost impossible to understand in today's context because they're newspaper stories. And newspapers really just kind of fell apart in the last 10 years. And that's what happened to... It's not that TV news has fallen apart. It's that it's changed. And what I found fascinating about this movie was the performance. Cate Blanchett's fantastic in it. Robert Redford is not. Robert Redford plays Robert Redford. He's about as Dan Rathery as I am. I mean, he just doesn't work as Dan Rather. And there's also, this movie has a lot of reverence to Dan Rather. And I guess if you're older than me, people remember when Rather was in his prime. And I know a lot of, in particular, liberals will love Dan Rather because he took on Nixon in that interview. I grew up with him in the 80s, where he was just the blithering old man. And you had Tom Brokaw, who really had the most gravitas as a news anchor. And Peter Jennings was just kind of an arrogant SOB. But Dan Rather was kind of a dope when I grew up with him, because he was kind of old and he was at his career. He didn't have the reputation later in his career that, like, Walter Cronkite had, you know, his predecessor. So this movie does kind of give a little bit of hero worship to Dan Rather, which is unnecessary and kind of cripples the movie at times. But I think what I found most interesting about this is what it takes to vet a news story. What needed to be done that wasn't necessarily done, and how hard it is to do that in today's world with computers and you know, the way you can forge documents raises all sorts of questions. And they never come to any sort of definitive answer. You could see where the filmmakers' politics lay in this movie. But it's irrelevant, because 60 Minutes, the team at 60 Minutes too, they screwed up. And you get to see the entire unraveling of this happen. And I found that fascinating as somebody who's worked in news. And that's the other thing, regardless of your politics, you should like this movie, because conservatives will love it because they're sticking it to the liberal media. And liberals are going to love it because it's going to be sticking it to President Bush. So I think that they kind of do this nice little shell game with the politics in this movie, that you can find something for wherever your worldview is on this. I enjoyed it, not even for the politics, but for how news works. So I'm going to have to say that Truth kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Next film I want to talk about is Burnt. Bradley Cooper plays a chef in the high-stakes world of French cuisine.
What do you want?
I'm going to run the best restaurant in the world.
Are you sure he's famous?
If you're a chef, he's like the Rolling Stones.
I don't want my restaurant to be a place where you come and eat. I want people to sit at that table and be sick with longing.
So, where you been?
Louisiana.
Doing what?
Sniffing, snorting, injecting.
If you try to start a new restaurant, there are at least a dozen people who will try to have you killed.
The kitchen's the only place I've ever felt like I really belonged.
About 10 years ago, I think, Bradley Cooper was in a TV show. One of the first times I really saw him, he was in this TV show called Kitchen Confidential. And what was sad about that show is I never watched it. And I even got sent the disc to review. And I took forever to put it in my player because I thought it was just a reality TV show, which I hate reality TV. But no, it was a sort of a dramedy behind the scenes of a kitchen. So it seems like he's retreading a character that he had on television. And that's sort of at least what the trailer looks like. I had not had a chance to see this. They did not screen it where I live, which is Columbus, Ohio. Not uncommon for the Weinstein Company to not screen stuff, but I would have expected this to get some sort of award push. But then the reviews started coming around from the national press, and this is not getting well reviewed. It is getting raked over the coals. It is getting grilled, if you'll pardon that pun. And it is not looking good for this film. Now, fortunately, Bradley Cooper's got Joy, which we talked about in the first segment. He's got that coming around the bend for him for his latest Oscar bid. It looks like it doesn't know what it's trying to market, because it's being labeled a comedy. I don't see a shred of comedy in this trailer. This trailer makes it look like the James Bond of kitchens, and I don't know if that's the case. I think it might just be a very high-stakes trailer that is not at all selling what is out there. Regardless, this movie seemed like a complete botched release from the Weinsteins, which they tend to do, where it had potential and they marketed it and then it just got its air sucked out of the room and we're left with not much. So I'm going to have to say, since I haven't seen it and they didn't allow me to see it, I'm going to have to say that Burnt gets a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse and Our Brand is Crisis.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Rolling through the movie reviews, let's talk about the horror movie that is out this week, and that would be Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. A group of scouts in high school team up with a cocktail waitress at a strip club to fight zombies.
What is going on?
Do you think everyone's eating each other?
Any more questions?
Guys, the police are gone. The military, they're not coming either. But tonight, we're going to show them what being a real scout's all about. We're just going to stand here, or we're going to go save the world.
It was a really good speech, Ben.
It's a zombie apocalypse! Come on, we're scouts! We're trained for this!
What is that?
It's a bomb!
What are you, the Taliban?
I've never been a huge fan of zombie movies, simply because I think that the original Romero films are cool, but when it's just a bunch of dead people walking around attacking people, it's not, you can really fall into some boring elements. But there was a movement about 10 years ago where suddenly they started to make zomcoms, where they suddenly took the zombie movies and they applied something different. They sometimes did cross-genre stuff, and we've seen stuff like a romantic comedy about zombies, which was in Warm Bodies a couple of years ago. That was an interesting take on the zombie archetype. But, you know, even 10 years ago, with movies like Shaun of the Dead and Fido, these were zombie movies that took a more comedic approach. And now there's a lot of them out there. But I actually have always kind of liked the zombie comedies over the just original zombie movies, because I think the zombie movies, it's just very easy to tell a not very compelling story. There are some good zombie movies out there, but there's more of a challenge. That's one of the things I don't like about The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead's not about zombies. The Walking Dead should not be called The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead should be called The Living Sitting Around Talking a Lot. There's going to be some zombies in the last 5 minutes. And it's about the human characters, but you know, you can also just have a bunch of dirty humans setting up a buffet for the zombies that you absolutely hate and you don't care if anyone lives or dies. Now, that's sort of outside of discussing Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, because really, Scout is more of just a send up of the genre, but it kind of, if it were original, if it was the first time we've had one of these kind of movies, I might have liked it better. As it is, it's just another zombie comedy that doesn't quite hit the mark. It's extremely gory. Don't get me wrong. You see a lot of heads explode in this movie. And if you want to see some crass zombie moments, you're going to get that. And this takes things in directions that are obvious when they start showing up on screen. But I don't want to sound like a prude, but there are moments in this movie where I saw it with a good friend of mine, Ed Douglas from ComingSoon.net. We checked it out, and he, at one point, he's like, really, are they going to go there? They went there. That's where they went. So, I mean, yeah, it was two old guys in a theater watching the movie. I felt like sort of an old fart, but this movie does miss the mark a lot of times, in the sense that when it goes gory, it doesn't go gory in the right way. I mean, there's some extremely funny, hilarious gore splatterfests out there. Like, if you want to go to the Dead Alive, which is, you know, Oscar winner Peter Jackson's Dead Alive, it has a lot of fun, and it just takes the splatterfest to the extreme. Or even something like a Charles Band's Reanimator, which is grisly and plays more as a horror movie than a comedy, but it certainly has its tongue in its cheek. Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, I don't know, it just feels like a bunch of obnoxious high school students got together and wrote a zombie comedy. It just doesn't quite work for me. And it has its moments, but there are some lines that are funny, but the characters just aren't there. It's okay. At best. So I'm going to have to say Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse, kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the other political movie out this week. Our Brand is Crisis. Sandra Bullock plays a disgraced political strategist who travels to Bolivia to help a presidential candidate disastrously behind in the polls.
It's a presidential campaign in South America. Fragile democracy, economy in real trouble. Our candidate is considered arrogant and out of touch with people's lives.
How far are you behind?
28 points.
If you want to win, we're going to have to take risks. Every event that Rivera attends, every speech, you tape it. If security beats you up, you are doing your job right. Get that beating on tape. Wake up. This is war. There's only one wrong in this, and that is losing.
This is technically inspired by true events, and why I am okay with this is they're not treating it like a based on true story, and it's not. There are some elements that are inspired by real events of political strategists going overseas to help out in elections. Obviously, Billy Bob Thornton plays a very James Carville-esque type character, and So that's recognizable to anybody who knows a little bit more about politics. But ultimately, this is an original story. So you could go search on Wikipedia what happened in the original story that inspired this movie, but it's not necessarily going to be a one-to-one. It's not retelling that story. So it is something unique. Generally, when you make a political movie, it's always dicey in America because if you make it about Democrats or Republicans, you're immediately going to galvanize the audience and people are going to be polarized and they're either going to want to condemn or they're going to want to support the candidate or the party of their choice. And that's always a challenge with American movies because you may be wanting to make a movie about a person, but you got to say they're Democrat or Republican at some point. You can skirt around that at times, but it's always hard to take the politics out of the political movie. The reason this one works is because we go down to Bolivia and we're playing in somebody else's political sandbox. I don't know Bolivian politics. I don't even know if the issues raised in this movie are appropriate to Bolivian politics. I just don't know. It's a completely different culture. It's a completely different political system. It's a completely different structure. So while you can recognize things, and if you really want to dig in and say, well, that's a Democratic or that's a Republican campaign issue, or, well, Billy Bob Thornton's playing essentially a James Carville, so I'm assuming he's aligned more with the Democrats. I mean, you could really dissect it that way if you really want to, but ultimately you can watch this, and while there's politics going on, it's more about the cutthroat nature of the campaign and the absurd yet true and crazy things that go on in a political campaign. And that allows you to observe the campaign without getting messed up with all those issues or candidates that you know. And that's where the worth of this movie is, because you can look at it and say, this is politics, and politics is a full contact sport, and politics is ugly, and politics uses a lot of horrible things that happen to the advantage of people who may or may not be good people, who may or may not have good policies, and who may or may not be lying through their teeth just to get in political office. Unlike a movie like The Ides of March, which I loved when The Ides of March came out, I thought that was a fantastic movie because it did show the ugly underbelly of politics. But that one was marred by being Democrat or Republican in nature. But overall, it's a well-made movie. It's directed by David Gordon Green, who's done a bunch of different things like The Sitter and Pineapple Express. So he's got a bit of a diverse resume. But this is actually a good political film for him to do, and it's something different, and I think Sandra Bullock does a great job. She owns the movie and she really carries it. It's got a great supporting cast. Not as much her against Billy Bob Thornton, although that's what the trailers are trying to show you. I think the trailers are pushing that either sexual chemistry or the old rivalry between the characters, when really it's more about her and it's more about the demon she has to overcome from her past to do her job. You know, maybe if this were released a little bit later in the political process, I mean, right now we're still in the foothills of the 2016 presidential race. Even though you wouldn't know from all the debates they're showing and how many times you see the candidates and the fact that there's 48 contenders on both the Republicans and Democrat side, you would think that we're in the heated debate yet, but we're not. Things haven't even, it's not even lukewarm yet. And if this had come out maybe next year, it might have been a little bit more relevant because we could escape from the current political climate. So I think it might be kind of lost in the shuffle, which is a shame because it's actually a pretty good movie. I'm going to have to say Our Brand is Crisis kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about horror movies with a Fat Guy 5. I'm also going to be talking about the box office and the world-famous DVD Roundup. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Happy Halloween! Well, Halloween weekend at least. I know that Sunday is November 1st, but it's Halloween weekend, so for me, it's like Thanksgiving weekend, where you have the whole weekend to celebrate and do Turkey Day stuff. Or it's not just Christmas for us, it's like leading up to Christmas, like 3 days, and then we have after Christmas doing family stuff. So for me, Halloween is Halloween weekend, and it's great because the 31st is falling on this weekend, and we can just enjoy it as being a big weekend of the last-ditch effort to enjoy Halloween. And in order to do that here on Fat Guys at the Movies in the Magical Studio in the Sky, I want to talk a little bit about one of my favorite genres, which is horror films. I'm often asked what my favorite horror movies are. And I recently realized I'm a bit of an old fuddy-duddy because all of them have been made in the previous century. I think the most recent release is in the 80s. In terms of horror movies, but you also have to look at when you, if you ask somebody what their favorite horror movies are, it's what they grew up with. It's what scared them as a kid. It takes a lot to scare me. There are very, very few movies I can watch that I honestly am scared by because I've seen so many of them and I know all the tricks. And I always hate when people say, well, it's not a horror movie because it didn't scare me. And I'm like, to me, a horror movie has horror elements to it, that it can be seen as scary. And if you can put yourself in the position of the people in the film, it can certainly be a horror movie. That's where you can make a movie like The Terminator can be classified as horror. It's a slasher movie, essentially, with lots of guns. So here are my top five horror movies. I'm going to give the number one. I'm going to go 1 to 5 because I think it's more interesting to go down the list. The first one, the best horror movie of all time for me is John Carpenter's The Thing, which is a remake of sorts of Howard Hawks' The Thing from Another World. What had happened was when Howard Hawks made The Thing from Another World, they didn't have the technology to do the original Who Goes There by John W. Campbell. So they made a monster movie out of it. And I like The Thing from Another World. I think it really works, and it's a neat little haunted house type thriller in the Arctic. But it essentially is James Arness in a rubber mask. But when John Carpenter did The Thing back in 1982, he wanted to go back to John W. Campbell's original story, which was about the shape-shifting alien that came from another world and had all these other creatures in its amalgamation of DNA. And he actually simplified the story quite a bit because there was a lot more characters in the original story. And the original story is okay, but a little hard to read at times. But he just put together one heck of a scary film with a great score and just intense scenes. There's very little in that movie that is not perfect, in my opinion. And also, very little in that movie that can't exist in any time, even today, because they're in Antarctica. It's a timeless movie, in my opinion. That's part of what makes it work. And plus, you had Rob Bottin's incredible special effects. The practical makeup effects are really excellent. And I actually liked The Thing prequel that they did in 2011. The second scariest movie to me of all time is Invasion of the Body Snatchers, 1978. Another remake of a movie from the 50s. It's the remake of the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers with Kevin McCarthy. This one, they put it into San Francisco. They go from a small town to a big city. And it's just a chilling look at the subversiveness of this invasion. And while the first movie was meant to be an allegory for communism, you can pull a little bit of political themes from it as well, but it's also just works as a rock and horror film and is a really terrifying thing. I remember seeing it when I was a kid. I couldn't sleep for weeks. Couldn't sleep for weeks, and my mom hated my dad for showing it to me. The third greatest horror movie of all time is Psycho, the original slasher movie. This is Alfred Hitchcock playing a bit against his own type, because he was always into suspense, but not outright gore and violence and horror. And don't get me wrong, it's pretty tame now, but it is a gory movie for 1960 standards. And it sort of set the stage for the slasher movie with the big knife and the stalking. And while there's only a handful of people that get killed in this movie compared to something like Friday the 13th Part 8, it's an impressive film. And even today, it's really nuanced and has some amazing moments to it. The fourth most terrifying movie, I struggled with this one because I wanted something from this series. And I'm going to settle on Bride of Frankenstein, which is my favorite of the Universal monster movies. They get a bit campy later on into the 40s. Once you're getting into House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula, it's getting a little goofy. But I love Frankenstein as a story. I love the book. And the original Frankenstein is fantastic. James Whale's Frankenstein is amazing. But Bride of Frankenstein actually capitalizes on greater themes. And, you know, all the sexual subtext to the movie is very interesting to look at nowadays with Dr. Pretorius trying to create life as a man. It is a brilliantly done movie and it's incredibly entertaining. But that entire run of Frankenstein, the first one, Bride of Frankenstein, and then Son of Frankenstein's really good. They still had Boris Karloff in that one. And then they go even like stuff like Ghost of Frankenstein. Ghost of Frankenstein is a neat twist in the series and then ends up setting things up for the monster to just be this voiceless brute in the next couple movies like Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula. But just the whole Universal Monster series is a lot of fun. Gets depressing as you get into the later ones, especially if you push all the way through to the 50s with The Creature from the Black Lagoon. Finally, the fifth one is Night of the Living Dead, 1968, the original one from George Romero. Not necessarily because it's the greatest horror movie, and it's not even, I don't even know if I'd say it's the best of the Dead movies that Romero did, but it launched the genre and it created its own genre. It redefined zombie from being just somebody from a voodoo cult taken over with mind control to a flesh-eating member of the undead. The entire series, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, that trilogy is pretty fantastic on its own. I've recently watched all three, and it has a lot to say about society, but it also just works as a great movie. So those are my five favorite slash most influential horror movies to myself ever. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office real quick. Last week, I was way off the mark. I said that Steve Jobs is going to win the weekend. And what did I say? 25 million? Well, I was an idiot. Steve Jobs did not make 25 million last weekend. It made 7.1 million, which is not good. But it's also not terrible. I know a lot of people are saying it's bombing because generally they tell whether a movie's a bomb or a disappointment if it doesn't meet its expectations. And people were thinking it was going to like maybe 15 to 20 and it made half that on the low end. And people at first were saying, well, it made less money than the movie Jobs with Ashton Kutcher. And I think more than anything else, Jobs took away some of its punch because it just felt like another Steve Jobs movie. But on top of that, that movie didn't do terribly well. I think there's a lot of interest in this in a small group, but the wide majority of Americans just really don't care. And it is a bit of a niche award film. It's a fantastic movie. Definitely worth seeing. Now it's also going to have legs. I think it's going to be sit there making 5-6 million each week as we move on into December. And then it's going to get some awards. So, and when the end of this run, it's going to have made plenty of money to make back its budget and then some. So this is not a flop in any sense of the imagination. The Martian ended up coming in number one in its fourth week with almost 16 million. And then Goosebumps came in next. And then Bridge of Spies came in next. The highest new movie was The Last Witch Hunter with just under $11 million, which is not good for Vin Diesel. It shows that if he's not driving a Fast and Furious car or voicing an alien, nobody cares about his films. Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension, came in with only $8 million in a time when these movies were making $40 million on Halloween. But the big bombs of the weekend were Rock the Casbah with $1.4 million and Gem and the Holograms with under that, $1.375 million. That is miserable for Jem. And considering that's a bomb for Jem, and Jem only had a budget of $5 million. That is terrible. And with good reason, because it alienated its audience. Now, I know I've heard a lot of people bemoaning the fact, oh, they're not going to be doing female power movies. No, I don't think anyone's going to look at this as a condemnation of female-centric movies, because you got plenty of the exception to that with stuff like Pitch Perfect that they even tried to tack on the success of it to, because it's the same studio. It's just Gem and the Holograms was a mess from the beginning. It's such a bomb, people are going to forget about it. Honestly, in a week, nobody's even going to remember this movie. This week, I think that Our Brand is Crisis, I'm going to put my money on that one. I think it's going to be another low weekend. You're not going to have anything really cracking much more than $15 million. Maybe The Martian can do well, but maybe Martian's going to win again. I'd like to see Our Brand is Crisis do better. And it's coming in tracking at like 7 or 8 million, but I'm going to say 15 just because if I'm right, I'm going to sound like a genius. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. We've got Southpaw, which was Jake Gyllenhaal as a boxer making a comeback after his wife dies. Pixels, which I liked a lot. I had a lot of fun. It's a great little movie. I think it suffered too much from Adam Sandler rot and his career that has kind of done more damage to himself than good lately. The Gift, which is a really good movie, directed by Joel Edgerton, and a neat little suspense film. The Human Centipede 3 is not a good movie, but it's out there, and there's a box set of all three movies. And then finally, Max, which I wasn't terribly impressed with. That's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the Peanuts movie and Spectre. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.